beyond good, beyond evil, beyond your wildest imagination.
Welcome again to another special crossover episode, Animation Aficionados Tooncast Beyond. This is continuing our series looking into the DC animated original movies. I am your host, Ben, and we're joined by my co-host, TV's Mr. Neil.
With this proton energy pill, I get the power of 20 atom bombs for a period of 20 seconds.
And we also have with us a host of Tooncast Beyond, TFT1, Mike.
Yes, that's right. And for the Tooncast Beyond listeners, this will be episode 3 in our DC movie spotlight. And tonight we're going to be talking about Justice League New Frontier. Such a breath of fresh air compared to last week's episode.
Well, what I love about this is the original comic itself was a love letter to that that little transition period between the Golden Age and the Silver Age of comics. You know, it was post World War II, pre Red Scare. It's this little butter zone of awesomeness about between the Golden Age variations, the Green Lantern, where the Lantern was like a genie lantern, and the Flash was Jay Garrick got his powers from breathing hard water, and yes, that did happen, and you know the Silver Age versions, you know, with Barry Allen, the Flash, who got his powers from lightning, and Hal Jordan, the Green Lantern, got his ring from a space police corps, and really that's the difference. It's you don't actually see, you know, the Golden Age versions of these characters in this, but what I did like was you actually did see the Golden Age versions of Batman and Superman in this and their transitions into their Silver Age versions.
Yeah. You know, this movie, as I said, coming off the heels of just a sour taste that Doomsday left in our mouths, New Frontier was so much better. It was better written. Voice cast was amazing.
Neil, someone listened to you because you always said, somebody cast her. They did.
Awesome.
Lucy Lawless as Wonder Woman.
Yeah.
Thank you.
That's a little weird to me, but okay.
Well, that's Neil's dream.
Right.
And like I said, The reason why I think a lot of the love came through is because the original comic book was a love letter to the Silver Age, and a lot of people that are working on the movie understood this, and a lot of that same love translated perfectly.
Well, to really set the stage here, the film was written by Justice League writer Stan Berkowitz, and it also had consulting on it. The guy that wrote the comic, Darwin Cook, I mean,
had
full interpretation, even on the DVD set. There are two separate commentaries, one with Bruce Timm and the producers, and one's just with Darwin Cook talking about the movie. So, I mean, this wasn't like Doomsday, where they may have talked to the writers of the Doomsday.
They didn't.
I'm just saying they may have like consulted with them, but they didn't bring anybody in to actually consult on the movie and what it is. Whereas this, they actually brought the guy that wrote the story in to consult on it to make sure the vision was done properly, and it was.
And also the change in the animation style to not quite mirror exactly, but mirror the what I would like to call the artistic intent of the comic was brilliant. It was beautiful and it was brilliant. And really what I love about this is, yes, there are segments with Batman and Superman and all these other characters, but to me, in my mind, this is really a Barry Allen story.
I would say that, yes. I would say that the main focus here is on Hal Jordan, Barry Allen, and Martian Manhunter. Batman and Superman are there. Wonder Woman's there. But, I mean, they're just there. I wouldn't say they're background characters because those are the big three of the DC, but the story isn't focusing on them. It's more so focusing on them as a part of the team. But as far as the overall individual stories, you have Barry's, Hal's, and Martian Manhunter's story. I really like this movie. And when we started hearing rumblings of that horrible, horrible live action thing that happened with the Yellow Fear Monster, my initial thought before they even mentioned who was going to be the Green Lantern in that movie, as soon as I heard David Boreanaz voicing him, I said, he would be perfect for a live-action Green Lantern. I don't care how old the guy is, whatever else, he can carry himself on screen as an actor. And him voicing Hal, honestly, for me, is probably one of the best voices of Hal ever.
I agree, and it's really hard to cast Hal as a voice because it's hard to reconcile the expectation people have for Hal and who Hal really is as a character, because the part of the thing is lots of fans memorialize and outright worship the myth of Hal Jordan. Sadly, some of these fans are actually writing the books now, and that sort of makes it to where it's an unattainable, ideal that's not who the character really is. Hal Jordan is a flawed person. He has done wrong. He has driven drunk. He has slept with an underage girl. He isn't the best man, but he is a hero.
Yes. When did you guys first see this? Did you guys like run out and pick this up on DVD as soon as it came out, or did you wait for the premiere, which happened on October 18th, 2008 on Cartoon Network?
I waited for the premiere personally because Superman Doomsday left a bad taste in my mouth.
No, as soon as I saw the trailer and all, nowadays with the internet, the special features like the making of stuff always leaks on the YouTube first. Whenever I saw those, I was like, "Yep, I gotta go out and get this," and I immediately went out and got it. What about you, Neil?
I just waited for the premiere.
You guys suck.
No, if you punch a dog in the nose and it doesn't come back to you immediately, you can't say the dog's dumb.
Well, right, but this, like we've said, this was a completely different story, completely different animation type style compared to Doomsday. So
a lot of the same team.
Well, but that doesn't matter though, because they're still doing very well. I mean, you know, granted Doomsday was a misstep, but you know, this kind of makes up for that, I think.
It does. It really does. And I really, like I said, I enjoyed a lot of what I enjoyed personally was the segments with Batman, especially how, you know, it actually had, my God, it's goddamn original Detective 27 Bob Kane Batman in there with the big ears, and it was the perfect translation of what the Bob Kane Batman originally was, except he didn't carry the dual pistols because that was something that they just sort of stripped out of the character. And for people who don't know, yes, Batman originally carried two pistols. in the original comics, just like the Phantom. And one of the bloodiest original issues you can get is the one where Batman fights the Mad Monk.
Yeah, the only complaint I have about Batman in this movie is that they should have gotten somebody else other than Jeremy Sisto to voice him. I like Jeremy Sisto as an actor, but his voice just does not fit Batman to me. Even in the Silver Age Batman, I don't know, it doesn't feel
right. He delivered one line perfectly. It was when he was talking to Martian Manhunter, and he said, "I have $1 million rock for the one in Metropolis. Yeah. All I need for you is to drop a dime for a box of matches."
Yeah, yeah, that was awesome.
And he delivered that line perfectly.
Yeah, he did. I will give him that, but just, I don't know, just the overall feel. And again, as I said, you know, the big three are almost second fiddle in this movie because, you know, Hal, Martian Manhunter, and Barry are the ones that are really with the story. As far as the cast goes, as I said, David Boreanaz, Miguel Ferrer, Neil Patrick Harris. What the hell is Peter McAllister doing in here? John Hurd as Ace Morgan? Wow. Huh.
Well, one thing to keep in mind is I really do see this more as a Barry story than a Hal story or even Martian Manhunter story because Martian Manhunter made a decision to come here early on. You know, Hal Jordan is in the military. He made the decision to fight long ago. Barry Allen was just a citizen, and you know, he made a decision to fight crime, and then all of a sudden, because he's wearing red or something, people aren't trusting him, and then you know he has to make that decision again, in the face of everybody not trust, you know, in the face of everything, he has to make that decision again.
Right, that's right, but still, it I don't know. Maybe it's because it starts off with telling part of Hal's story that I think that the movie is solely for Hal. But it's, you know, as I said, it's more of a team effort, really. And, you know, as Neil has always wanted, Lucy Lawless is now Princess Diana.
Although I kind of wanted her as the physical representation, but I'll take it.
Well, she kind of is almost a little bit.
That's why he wanted her cast in the movie, in a live-action movie. But, Neil, in your opinion, would you say this is a Barry Allen story or a Hal Jordan story?
I'm going to lean toward Barry Allen because the Green Lantern part of the story was kind of slow in developing, and he didn't become the Green Lantern until very late in the movie. And
The last 8 minutes,
basically.
I will say that it is a Barry Allen story to the point where as soon as we see him, it's mainly focused on, like, the police are going after him. He's using his powers. He's stopping Captain Cold. He's the one that has to run at super speed around the Centaur thing to destroy it. I will give you guys that, but just the way the movie starts out, most people that don't know a lot about comics, your everyday mainstream audience might think that it's a Hal Jordan story because it starts out with him in the war and doing all the flying and then going to Ferris Aerospace and all that. And then you have, which I would actually have preferred Adam Baldwin over this, you have Kyle MacLachlan as Superman. Ugh.
Well,
in the head.
This leads me to one thing. I know it was the scene was exactly the same in the comic, but the scene near the end where Aquaman shows up dragging Superman out of the ocean saying, He's been crying for a woman named Lois for the last 10 minutes and wouldn't shut up. And I'm like, well, gee, that was very tacked on, and I guess. All right.
Yeah.
We have Aquaman, I guess. Okay.
Yeah. And then...
And that's it. That's about as mean as I can be to this movie because everything else is great.
Yeah. Well, yeah. You know, and you got Vandal Savage, Phil Morris, as King Faraday. That's pretty awesome. Lex Lang as Rick Flagg. And then a much better voice for Lois than Anne Heche ever could be, which is Kara Sedgwick.
The closer.
Yes.
And I like how it harkens to a lot of a lot of Silver Age that a lot of new people would know about, like the fact that Lois is a TV reporter.
Mm-hmm.
It's not many people remember those days.
Yeah. Overall, I mean, I really like this movie. I like all the little nuances in it, like with the Flash and the way he uses his super speed.
And really, one thing we have to say is, in the end, the villain itself, you know, this unspeakable horror from beyond the stars, is not that important, because it's basically just there to bring everything together, and that's perfectly fine for what the story is. The story isn't about the villain. The story is about is about you know,
uniting the team.
Exactly.
Yeah. And the only really great thing about the villain in this movie is the fact that it's Keith David doing the voice. Keith David has an amazing voice for voiceover, and he has this really epic evil voice in this. And that was really great. But, I mean, it's a giant floating living island.
And we also, you know, the animators did a great job of when Hal flew his plane into it. Mm-hmm. And it got really trippy.
Oh, yeah. That was awesome. The effects in this are great.
No, they went real trippy with the animation there. I mean, It was nice to see some good, honest to goodness experimental animation once again.
Yeah. Neil, what are your overall thoughts, or any thoughts you have on this?
Well, the only thing that we haven't covered yet is the Martian Manhunter, and that I kind of like the early development in the movie where he's watching TV, and I think that's actually how he learns English, so it's kind of like, yeah. Splash.
Didn't they also do... Oh, I'll let you go ahead, Neil.
At one point he's sitting there in front of the TV, and he morphs into Bugs Bunny. And not just any Bugs Bunny, the classic Bob Clampett Bugs Bunny.
That's what happened in the comic, Neil.
That was wonderful.
Yeah, Martian Manhunter in this was great. Because as you said, he's learning the culture. He just arrived, he's learning the culture. And honestly, this movie is more so a testament to humankind rather than the superheroes, because you have all these people coming together in the end to fight this thing. All the military fights, the fact that Jean portrays himself as a policeman.
And you also have the scene where Jean is actually being affected by the living island, and it took a human's bravery for him to stamp out of it and, you know, hero up.
Where's a rim shot app when you really need one?
Well, I'm not allowed to say hero up?
Well, I guess you live in Superhero City then, right next to Villainville.
Now, it's big damn hero time. That's not from a superhero show. That's from Firefly.
Yeah. Overall, this movie's great. The animation's great. The voice acting, even though I wish we had different, and it didn't matter. They could have gotten anyone else. I'm not sitting here saying I want Daly or Newbern or Conroy as either Superman or Batman. I'm saying they could have gotten anyone else other than Kyle MacLachlan and Jeremy Sisto as those two characters. I just didn't like their voices, regardless of that one great line that Batman had. I just didn't like it. I didn't like either one of their voice portrayals.
But then again, they are barely in the movie when you look at it.
Right.
I mean, they were working more to cast a perfect Hal Jordan and a perfect Barry Allen. I mean, Neil Patrick Harris like took it home as Barry Allen.
Yeah, he did.
And that's what they were looking for. I mean, you spend a lot of time casting for what's in the end is almost 10 minutes of dialogue from somebody, or do you spend a lot of time casting someone who is like 50 minutes of dialogue?
Yeah. what else can we say about this one? I mean, I guess I could kind of go into the special features that are on the DVD. Both commentaries are great. To actually have a commentary by the guy that wrote the actual comic is very insightful. The behind-the-scenes stuff was great.
Well, Warner Brothers Animation never skimps on the extras. I mean,
No, they never do.
Even the god-awful Mystery of the Batwoman had tons of extras. I mean, it's not like they were, you know, bought by Disney, who doesn't give extras at all. Marvel.
Yes. I could see that setup coming a mile away.
Yeah. So to date, Justice League New Frontier has made $5,237,567, and it has sold just over 300,000 units.
So it definitely more than made its money back, but it also didn't make what Superman Doomsday did, which is kind of a shame because this is obviously a superior product.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. It's a hell of a lot of shame here because, as you said, superior product, you know, much better story, much better animation, way better voice casting.
I think it really helps that they told a story that wasn't vilified for 10 years and tried to decide, okay, we have to get what's vilified to make it work, because New Frontier as a graphic novel is loved, not well known, but loved around the circles that do know it. I think that's what really helped it because it was fairly recent too. It wasn't as old as the Death of Superman storyline either. So, you know, it was fairly recent. It was fairly loved. So those two things helped it, you know, push through with, especially with the actual author helping, you know.
Now, how much of this is condensed from the actual story of
It's actually a very good, near faithful adaptation.
Oh, cool. And I love how they used the Kennedy bits at the end.
Yes.
You have no idea what I'm talking about.
No, I do. I know the speech you're talking about. Yes.
I thought that was very awesome because it's the Kennedy speech up against the heroes fighting this great evil at the time, you know, and in the end, Flash saves the day. So going into the IGN replacement crew, 1 through 4, 1 is don't watch this even if it's free, 2 is worth a watch if it's free on TV, 3 is worth adding to the Netflix list, which it is currently not on Netflix Instant, which is a shame, and 4 is this is a must add to your DVD collection. Ben, 1 to 4, what do you give New Frontier?
I give it a definite 4. This is really the team, you know, shaking off the cobwebs, really, you know, they got their act down now. They know what they're doing. This is definitely a 4.
Neil?
I'm going to give this movie a wonderful review of, I'd say 3. I'm not quite the DVD collector, so I'd say watch it on Netflix if you can get it. And if you're just really that superhero fan, go for the DVD.
Yeah. I'm going to give it a 4 as well, because this is a movie I could watch, you know, once every 3 or 4 months and just really still love it. You know, as we've said, this movie is very well done. This movie, surprisingly, this DVD came out when we were still having the Blu-ray versus HD DVD war. Wow. That's hilarious.
More like a backyard brawl.
Yeah, ain't that the truth?
Yeah, everyone knew Blu-ray was going to win. Yeah. I knew a lot of early HD DVD adopters that were very pissed off after they put some dime down on some HD DVD players. Like, you do know that Blu-ray is going to win. I mean, they got all the studio support. That's what counts. And they're like, no, you're wrong. HD DVD is just better. I'm like, that doesn't mean anything. It's the same thing with Betamax. You know, Betamax is technically a better picture than VHS, but which one won again?
VHS. Entertainment Weekly, talking about direct-to-videos and Superman Doomsday, revealed that pre-orders for the New Frontier were tracking further ahead than expected. So, that's saying something. I mean, regardless of how bad Doomsday was, if the pre-orders for this were tracking ahead of what they're expecting, that says something about this movie.
It certainly does. It says something about the people who, you know, word of mouth really helped too, because, like I said, the graphic novel is fairly well loved.
Yeah. I honestly would love to pick this up on the graphic novel just to read it and just to see the visuals in the graphic novel, but the movie is a great adaptation. So with that, here on Tooncast Beyond, I think we're going to take a break. You're going to hear some crazy ads, and then we'll come back with our final thoughts. We'll be back after this.
You can now hear the KidCast Radio Network while on the go with Stitcher Smart Radio. Stitcher is a free news and talk mobile app available for your smartphone. And when you download Stitcher to hear KidCast Radio, you'll have a chance to win money. Downloading is quick and easy. Just find Stitcher in the App Store. During registration, hit the promo code box and enter KidCast Radio, all one word, to get automatically entered to win $100. The latest episodes of the shows will be waiting for you in your favorites. You'll get access to lots of other amazing shows, too. Always available to you on demand, no syncing. It's Stitcher Smart Radio. Don't forget to enter promo code KidCast Radio when you register.
Hey, I'm Gary.
I'm Greg.
I'm Chuck.
And I'm Justin.
Join the four of us every week on the internet's number one G.I. Joe podcast, What's on Joe Mind?
That's right. It's Joe news, reviews, and special guests like you've never heard them before delivered right to your MP3 player.
Think of it as Joe Talk meets Sports Talk. And we make fun of Chuck.
Right. Hey.
We're just kidding, Chuck. Kind of.
Yeah. Sometimes Chuck makes fun of himself.
Right. Hey.
It's What's on Joe Mind. Every week on the KidCast Radio Network, InsidePulse.com, Stitcher Smart Radio, and iTunes. Download and listen today.
Can I say something about Transformers?
No!
The Webcast Beacon Network has been covering and promoting creativity and the creative process since 2007, starting with the Webcomic Beacon, a topical webcomics podcast with a jovial bunch of misfits like your local morning radio show. The Webcomic Beacon Newscast recaps, reviews, and discussions of community and industry news relative to comic creators, especially of digital distribution. Also, the Tropecast, the ever-tangential discussion of literary and visual memes. And finally, Web Fiction World. Before webcomics, there was independent and self-published web-release written fiction and literature. Find this all at webcastbeacon.com. Be sure to grab a master RSS feed or master iTunes feed and not miss a thing.
Like animation? Come listen to Animation Aficionados.
And if you disagree with us, you could be a guest on a future show.
Available on iTunes, the Zune Market, and AnimationAficionados.com.
Tooncast is dedicated to the cartoons we grew up with. 100 episodes and more make up one of the GCRN's most popular podcasts. Join hosts TFG and Mike, Optimus Solo, Terror the Rising Star, and tons of guest hosts. We also have voice actor and writer interviews. Tune in to Tooncast as we look back on the cartoons that defined us as geeks. You can find Tooncast on iTunes and the web at www.geekcastradio.com. Tune in. We are back here on Tooncast Beyond and Animation Aficionados. Neil, final thoughts on New Frontier.
Good movie. I'm not familiar with the comic. Ben would be a better candidate to kind of wrap it up, but I liked it. It was a fun movie. I liked the Flash in it. I liked the Martian Manhunter. Wasn't too crazy about the Green Lantern part of the story, but you know, it's not that much of a flaw. So yeah, go watch it, kids.
My final thoughts, because we'll let Ben go last, seeing as how he'll have the most to say. My final thoughts is, as I said, the voice cast in this is great. All of the stories for the team coming together are great. The animation's great. There really isn't a single misstep in here outside of my little nitpicks of Superman and Batman's voices, but they really aren't the characters for this movie, so I can overlook that. What about you, Ben? What are your final thoughts?
I think this is one of the best near-direct adaptation of an existing graphic novel because there's not that much adaptation decay. Having Cook as part of the team really helped it. The animation style is beautiful and really harkens to what the book's art style is. And other than the Aquaman, this man is keeps on asking for Lois. Does anyone know who Lois is? Seeing at the end, this is actually a great movie, and I just sort of stopped it right before then.
That's funny. All right, so thank you for joining us here on the Tooncast Beyond Animation Aficionados crossover. There are several ways to get in contact with us or leave feedback for the shows. Visit the websites geekcastradio.com and animationaficionados.com. You can comment on each of our episode posts. Leave the show's feedback in iTunes. Please do this. Follow us on Twitter. The show names there are Tooncast Beyond, A Aficionados. My Twitter is TFG1Mike, and Neil doesn't care about Twitter, so... Ben, do you have a personal Twitter other than the Animation Aficionados one?
Yes, I do.
Which would be?
It's only for friends.
Oh, God. Twitter is not Facebook, damn it. Speaking of which, become a fan on Facebook. Go to facebook.com/GeekCastRadioNetwork and facebook.com/AnimationAficionados. Call the voicemail line, tell us the show you're leaving the message for, and your name, 502-526-5821. We hope you enjoyed this episode of Tooncast Beyond and the Animation Aficionados crossover, and join us next time when we will be continuing the DC Universe Animated Movie Spotlight with Batman Gotham Knight. Ugh. For now, I am TFG1 Mike with...
Jeeves Mr. Neil.
And Ben the host.
With the boast.
We will see you next time.
Good night.
Bye.
I'm willing to put my life on the line to do what I have to. But it has to be mine, no one else's.
Yeah.